And that really brings us to discussing the matzav in the world today with our children. And I dare say, as of the last couple of years, and I've become acutely aware of it over the last couple of months, that we're talking about adults as well. You know, whether keeping the kids in line, keeping the kids on the derech, and keeping the adults on the derech. Because very sadly that there are huge numbers of married, family, adults, yeshiva educated, who are just, you know, they had enough and they're drifting. And it's all part of the same issue of how can we present in the earliest stages of life a Yiddishkeit that's so vibrant, that's so meaningful, that's so passionate, that's so relevant, that's so, they feel so connected to, that, you know, that they will be stronger and better equipped to face whatever challenges and difficulties come out there. And there are many challenges. There are the personal things that happen in people's lives, and there's the troubling things that go on in the world, and there's the frustrations and unhappiness that people have for various reasons, and there's general disillusionment, which often we tend to blame on, you know, everything's blamed on Hashem and the immediate environment. And if the immediate environment is a religious environment, so if I'm depressed or unhappy, so I'm going to blame that. And it's very sad what's happening. But Lamaisa, I think that if we focus on how to make the educational experience, both as mechanchim and as parents, to make it much more relevant and much more exciting and much more penetrating, and reach them with a greater sense of strength and conviction and feeling and therefore permanence, I think we've gone a long way to help this problem. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that today. I really had wanted to get started with some of the more intellectual aspects and primary source material, I guess we could call it. But I think just maybe to work our way into that, I think we could start. There's a Mishnah in, I think I left some copies here before, I'm not sure. I wanted to have, did I have any of these here before? No?
I'm not sure.
Thank you so much. Thank you. There's a Mishnah in Brochus. It's actually on page 2 over here. The Mishnah says, like this. First, it says, "Atzeik l'shov arezu tefila shov." One who cries of something that has already passed, it's a false, a vain tefila. It gives two examples, and I would like to suggest that referencing these two examples can be very helpful in the process of strengthening our children. Let me explain. One is Hoyo Ishta, I forget which one it says first. Hoyo Ishta Muberes, or it's called Svocha. I don't remember. Hoyo Ishta Muberes, his wife was pregnant, and he says, Yerosin Shetelet Ishti Zochar. Haresu Tfilashov. His wife is pregnant, he says, oh, it should be a boy. It's a Tfilashov. And the Gemara explains that that's after 40 days, when it's finally determined whether it's Zochar Nekeva. And then it's a tefillah shov, because, in fact, the Rishonim use the lashon shov v'sheker. It's vain because it doesn't really mean anything, because it happened already. And it's sheker because you don't really mean it. You don't really mean, when you know that it's already determined, you don't really say, oh, please, it shouldn't be. It is, it is. Fine. Second example is, hois kol tzvocho be'ir. There's screaming in the city, there's fire engines raging. It says, yiros ha'shlo yehe b'tuch beisi. Shouldn't be in my house. So that too, the Mishnah calls it tefillah shov, because it's tzoyek l'shovar. Whatever it is, if it's burning, it's burning. Either there's a fire burning, and you say, "Oh, it shouldn't be my house." If it is, it is, and therefore you don't really mean it. It's not real. It's not meaningful. And shov v'sheker, fine. I think that the mentioning these two things together has a very big advantage. And let me explain why. The second one on Kol Svocha Be'ir, if we look at the Mishnah, if we look at the Gemara, we may have referred to this once, says Hillel HaZokein, Tanur Rabbonin, Hillel HaZokein would come into a city and he'd say, Yihirotzen Shlo, he'd say, Batuach Ani Shein Zer B'tuch Be'isi. Not Yihirotzen, but Batuach Ani, I have B'tochen inside of my house. And the Gemara justifies that with a posuk Mishmor Ro Lo Yiro Nochon Libo B'tuach B'Hashem. If one has B'tochen in Hashem, he need not be afraid of any Shmor Ro. Fine. Now,
I may have it happen there.
What? Okay, wait, we'll discuss that in a minute. But wait, but I have a different point. That in itself is maybe for that reason too, but it's a hard nut to swallow. B'tochen, it's not. Therefore, it's not going to be. Even if it didn't happen already, that would be a rough thing. And if it did happen, it's even rougher. The concept of bitochen to a skeptic, to a novice at Yiddishkeit, and we all start out at that point, at some point in life, can be very, wonderful. I wish it were true. And this reaction you get all the time. Oh, I wish I could believe that. But that's why I think reading this Mishnah has an additional advantage. Why? Because the first case in the Mishnah is, or I should know what before I talk. That was the first case of Ishtim Uberes. So the first case is very interesting because the Gemara says, what? This is a different one. No, I don't have it. Thanks. Okay. Anyway, so the first case in the Mishnah is Ishtim Uberes, and then Gemara says after 40 days it's a Tefillah Shof. Maisa, if you look at the old biology books, actually till 1990, you'll find that Chazal didn't know what they were talking about, because everybody knew that the determination of male-female happens at the moment of conception. The distribution of the XY chromosomes, that's what it's all about. In 1990, in July, in the journal Nature in Great Britain, was published a study. It was actually reported in the New York Times that they had just determined that there are two determinations of Zohar Nekeva. There's a genetic determination at the moment of conception. And then, based on some hormones or something that get involved, they say from around the 42nd to the 47th day, there's a developmental determination. It actually starts developing, and it could be genetically a girl and still develop as a boy. And they've even found problems with the Olympics. They found people where they were pretending to compete as women. They were men and they had women's clothes. It was a whole thing. So anyway, this was discovered then. In fact, in the New York Times article, they said this Talmudic scholar or teacher what he thought of the difference, because the rabbis say 40 days and science is now in 1990 all of a sudden starting to say 43 to 47 days, something like that. He says, well, science is finally catching up. Now, that tidbit, just as this, not to make a big deal of it. Now let's learn the second case in the Mishnah. What that does is it gives a certain level of credibility to the rest of the Mishnah. In other words, hey, these rabbis knew something that the scientists didn't know. Now, I admit that as we get further and further away from 1990, this becomes less dramatic. You know, when I would talk about this in 1991 or 92 or 93, when you could still find all the science books saying the opposite, and you know, that was, but it's still there. The idea that Chazal knew, they understood the world. They knew what was going on in this world. They spoke to the reality of human existence.
The eighth day verse also, you want to say.
What's that?
The eighth day verse.
There are many things like that. But here in this Mishnah, it's beautiful because you have a chance. You see, the trick is like this. If you want to convince children, yeshiva students, even people who are really strong of something, when you come head on, there's always some resistance. There's always some skepticism. There's always I'm going to prove it to you. Oh, no, you're not. You know, and that's why we have to talk in very understated terms in general. you know, I say the word proof is a dirty word. You know, I'll show you something interesting. You know, I used to refer to it like they used to be in my day a statement. A funny thing happened to me on the way to the office. In other words, it's coincidental. It's nothing. It's no, you know, I'm just talking. One of the things that I did something yesterday. No, Shabbos. Shabbos, I had a group we had, besides the yeshiva, we had a group of from a yeshiva that does Kirov, a whole group from one of these high schools. And I really had an opportunity to make a pitch for the truth of Torah Misinai and the benefits that it brings to a happy life and everything. But I was able to hook it to the parsha. And when you do that, you get an extra credibility. Why? Because when you come and you make a speech and you have an audience, so the audience is resistant, like you're talking to me. You know, usually in the shul when the rabbi's talking, the guy puts his head down so it should go to the guy behind him. You know, like, so I don't want, but when you talk about the parsha, nobody knows. He said, it just happened to be in the parsha. So it takes away some of the confrontational aspect of it. So I use that. So here too, it takes away confrontation because it's in the same Mishnah. In other words, you're coming to talk to me about bitochen, but in the meantime, the source that speaks about bitochen, which is the same Gemara that said 40 days and science is finally catching up, you've already put. Now, if you make a whole speech about it like this, we're just doing this for pedagogical purposes. The more speech you make about it, the more you ruin it, because people get resistance, people, you know, defense mechanisms. But just let's learn the Mishnah. Ooh, the Mishnah is very interesting. You know something? I read something recently that until 1990, very interesting. Now let's go to the next case in the Mishnah. So all of a sudden, the Tanoim and the Amoroim in the Gemara, because 40 days is the Gemara, and then Hillel HaZaken is also brought in the Gemara, everybody gets a new level of credibility. Okay, now, but Lamaisa, what we want to talk about is Bitochen. And what I mean is as follows. One of the biggest problems that we have today with Yiddishkeit, with kids, and it's really, I believe it's a bum rap that has been somewhat influenced by the religions of the world. Because most religion has boiled down to ritual. Ritual practices. You know, it's before your time, but Manischewitz wine, which is one of the earliest wine companies, I remember as a kid, sacramental wine. That's what it was. You don't see that anymore. In our kosher wines, sacramental wine. It was a concept, I think, that was borrowed. What?
The prohibition, maybe.
Maybe, I don't know, but I thought it was borrowed from the Goyishe Welt. And wine is used as a sacrament, as a kiddush, you know, something. But it like, everything was ritual. Ritual, this is what we do. And Yadus, in reality, the ritual is only and all about inducing feeling. It's all about feeling. But unfortunately, the feeling part seems to be left someplace in the I don't know where, left out in the cold. Chazal say, Rachmona Liba boy. What does Hashem want? He wants heart. He wants your heart. That's what it's all about. Everything that we do is to evoke feeling, emotion, connection, relationship with Hashem. Midas Tovus. This is the tachlis of everything. But unfortunately, the ritual and has become predominant, and the ritual is oftentimes overwhelming. So much to do, so many halachas, so many, especially what they verbalize, restrictions. So, and the concept of the privilege of the ritual and the benefit of the ritual is really sort of marginalized, and that's a major problem. One of the most practical, so in order to do something to take it beyond ritual, what we really have to do, and I hear this from people all the time, we have to bring God back into our religion. They say, what kind of stupid talk is that? But, you know, it's not such stupid talk, because a yeshiva bocher, the finest yeshiva bacha, could wake up and maybe greater people than him, can wake up in the morning, start with Meida Ani, end at night with Hamapil, and not once think about Hashem. And daven three Shmoneh Esrei and everything else, maybe a little something, maybe something happens, if there's a problem or something, you know. We're so mechanized and ritualized, and so we have to get back that connection.
Chassidim are better with that.
Chassidim may be better with that. That could be. I don't know for sure, but it could be. I can hear it.
Regarding that topic, that aspect, that's why, as younger kids, very often they connect the younger kids better because a lot of
mm-hmm. I could hear that. Bechlal, younger kids, I think, do hear about Hashem. It's when you get a little older, we forget about Him. The younger kids forget Hashem is a reality. Hashem is a reality. That reality gets lost. And I suspect it's a little bit our fault. Because in our world, where the kid is not doing anything. So it's all Hashem. We have to work. We have to do. We're so busy. We're doing everything. Accomplishing everything. So sort of Hashem gets lost in the process. Bitochen, the concept of Bitochen and what it's based upon, can retrieve and redirect this whole system. And let me explain what I mean. First of all, Bitochen is based on Emunah. Because Kol Habiteach Ma'amin, everyone who has, that's the lashon of the Ramban, everyone who has Bitochen has to believe in Hashem. Because if you don't believe in Hashem, then who are you trusting? Okay? So that's number one. You have to believe in the existence of Hashem. You have to believe in His power, because if He doesn't have power, I can't trust Him, because He's not capable. You have to believe in His involvement, in His knowledge of everything that's going on in the world. You have to believe in His willingness to get involved in every detail that goes on in the world. Otherwise, what are you trusting Him for? He doesn't dirty His hands with those things. So already, by attempting to infuse Bitochen in our children, or in anyone, what first thing we had to do is we already made an awareness that there is Hashem and all of the basics. Now, something very interesting, I may have mentioned a lot of this before, but I can't help that. I certainly can't remember that, and it is interconnected, but my memory is so bad, I just forgot what I wanted to say. that I believe that I preach Bitochen to people who don't believe in Hashem. What do you mean? I just contradicted the Ramban. Ramban says Kol Habiteach Ma'amin. You must have Emunah, otherwise you can't have Bitochen. But it's true, but it's not necessarily the way to go, and I'll tell you why. Because you want to convince me of Emunah. I'm not interested. I don't believe. I don't want to believe. Leave me alone. I remember from my grandmother's day that believing carries a heavy price tag. You got to do this. You can't do that. I'm interested. Now, I want to motivate you to believe. You know what the greatest motivator is? If belief in God and His involvement and His caring and His love and His ability and everything can help me in two areas, to get what I want in life and to give me a sense of peace of mind as I go through this world, all of a sudden I have now a motivation to believe. Until now I had a negative motivation because my grandmother, I remember how limited her life was. I remember my grandmother used to sit in the house on Shabbos like this all day long with nothing to do. I'm not interested in that, So I can't go. But now you're telling me this belief is a means of achieving what you want and keeping your sanity and peace of mind in the process? I'm ready to listen. So the truth of the matter is the Bitochen, although it needs the Emunah, it can open up the doors and open up the mind to being ready to be a receptive of Emunah even before a person actually has it. So it becomes a motivation. And so it becomes very important. Even, and again, all of these things work together because they're not going to say, well, our kids are really apikursim, so let's talk to them about Emunah, about Bitochen, and then they know about Emunah, they know about Bitochen, but we're talking about advancing the educational process. When you advance the educational process, you go step by step. On each level, it's as if you didn't have anything. You're starting from beginning on the new level. So now on this level, we got to have a higher level of motivation to have a higher level of Emunah, And I suggest that that can come with an appreciation of bitochen. Now, in order even to begin to appreciate bitochen, a person has to have a few things. One of the things that can help, and it's only a piece, the stuff that we discuss, there are no simple pills. It's very complex. There are very many different things. It's a whole chokhmah, and it's and people will add their own twists to it and their own dimensions to it, and that's the way it is. But in order to begin the process, one way to begin the process is the credibility of Chazal. And that's why I think this Mishnah is so good, because I've just subtly established the rabbis were privy to information that took science an additional 1,700 years to discover. Wow. And if you're really interested, I'll show you that that's not the only information that they were privy to. Maybe, you know, a wise guy will say, oh, they lucked out, you know, they guessed, you know, like that. I'll show you so much more that we know there's tons of such information. But just that subtle innuendo that these... Now the rabbis come along and tell us something else. Hillel HaZokein. Even though you're not supposed to pray for something which happened already, but there's a power that's greater than prayer. Now, in a certain sense, by the way, something else. This is devious. They would love to hear about a power that's greater than prayer. Because prayer is a big pain. You sit all day and daven an hour in the morning, get another half here and there. For kids, well, they don't want to daven.
That's adults
all. No, what?
Adults have the same problem.
Okay, you'll walk into the shuls, you see. Yeah. So if you got a shortcut to prayer, it doesn't even require praying. Wow. So already you got a captive audience, you have a motivation. What's the motivation? The motivation is Hillel HaZokein was not allowed to pray. I really don't know, because Hillel, according with his level of bitochen, could have prayed, but that's not clear. But the Mishnah says, Tzorek l'shovar, tfil hashov, don't you dare, right? But, Tana Rabbonon, Hillel HaZokein hoyebo be'ir, v'shovar kol tzvocho, v'omar yehirotzen shelo yehe b'toich beisi, and Chazal justify it with a posuk in Tehillim Yishmor o Lahiro. What? Batuach ha'akiz, I'm sorry. Batuach ha'anish ein zeh b'toich beisi, and so now, look at this. Hillel HaZokein walking to a city. There's a fire burning. And he stands there and says, I am Batuach. And he means in Hashem, not in his bitachon, his security company or his insurance company, but Batuach ani shein zeh b'toich beisi. Wow. Look at that. Now, it sounds ridiculous. But already we penetrated with a little bit of credibility, because it's in the same Mishnah and the same Gemara where credibility was established. And more than that, oy, if I could only feel that. See, convincing someone of something that's difficult really requires first a desire to be convinced. If I have a desire to be to oppose it, then you have a very difficult time convincing me. If I have a desire to be convinced, that I have a motivation to be convinced, all of a sudden, wow, yeah. You know, but what do they say? The marketing people say that people, or some of the psychologists, I don't know, when you buy a new car, then all of a sudden you notice all the ads about that car, that was the best deal on the market, you know. Until then, you never even noticed anything. All of a sudden, I say, wow, look at that. Look, you know, I want to justify what I did. I want to feel good about it. All of a sudden, everything, the mind is captive to the desire to feel good. And anything that's going to make me feel good is all of a sudden my mind is working towards that direction. So you have two things going over here. Number one, I have a certain level of credibility because the same rabbis that said this were the ones who knew scientific information. Now, if they knew scientific information, then the bizarreness in the world of reality of the concept of bitochen is no more bizarre than it was to say that until 40 days you could pray for a zohar when we know it was determined at the moment of conception. So already I sort of leveled the playing field. I said, well, they knew this, so you know, maybe they know this. So now I have a level of credibility. I have a sort of an equation that says, really, if they knew that, they could know this too. And I also have a great desire. I wish that I had a formula. When I face a danger, when I've heard of a tragedy, and to be able to be sure, that it's not mine, even in a situation where it's already happening, which, by the way, that's a big shaila, but the Me'iri, hopefully we'll get to it another time, the Me'iri actually learns clearly like that. It's not that he was traveling with Bitochen all the time, you know, therefore he was Batuach, but he learns, he heard about it, and then he muscles the Bitochen right now. You'll ask me, how does that work? Hashem, I guess, knows who's going to have Bitochen, and there's Mesab of the Sibus accordingly. Be that as it may. So now this, I believe, is something. Now, if we want to get this, now I believe like this, Bitochen really is something else. Bitochen is the ultimate in relationship with Hashem. And the Meshech Chochma, Remer Simcha writes that the source of the in the Torah of Bitochen is V'dovaktoboy, Dveikus Hashem, clinging, cleaving to Hashem, because that's what Bitochen is. I'm trusting Hashem. I put my confidence completely in Him. Even though I do ishtadlus, but I know that it's all up to Him. I'm just mechuyev to do. I'm not supposed to rely on miracles, and not supposed to be lazy and whatever, but I'm relying on Him. That forges a relationship. Now, the concept of relationship with Hashem is very bizarre to people that don't have such a thing, but very heartwarming. Because I would love to have that relationship. I use this example today. First time I ever thought of such an example. I says, David Friedman, who is now the designate for to be the ambassador to Israel. His father, after he retired, used to be moving to the neighborhood, he davened the Beth Sholom, he used to help us a lot. In fact, he even got a check for $5,000 from David Friedman. So in my mind, I'm thinking, David Friedman, he's right there. He's with Trump. He's over there. You know, does that bring me any closer to the White House? No. You couldn't care less about the White House. But I'm telling you, in my mind, those thoughts went on. I was embarrassed to say so. But it went on. You know, I know him. Actually, I have another connection to him also through his partner in his law firm. I said, ooh. No, I don't want anything from Trump. I don't want to go to the White House. I'm not interested in going to Washington. But there's such a thing that you want. We want a relationship with the Malchus. We do. We want to be Mekorav LeMalchus. It's very gishmak. In case I need, if I need a favor, if I this, I just have to, you know, or I walked around. I'll tell you something. I walked around for a few days saying that I have tickets to the inauguration because someone that we know gave a fortune of money to Trump and has tickets to the inauguration, and this individual is not going to go. So I could.
The fundraising.
What?
But then we
found out they won another $50,000 for the tickets to someone who gave them $5 million. So, not shy. So I'm not going to the inauguration. Wasn't going to go anywhere. I'm just saying this idea to have a relationship with Hashem. Now, the problem is that I have trouble imagining myself having such a relationship. In fact, I have another problem. My problem is that when I talk to him, someone just mentioned this to me today, when I talk to him, he doesn't answer. Just yesterday, we said, Terem Nikro, how does it say, Terem Yikro Elecho Avaniene. He says, he does answer, but he answers with action, not with words. So kids have to learn to see that he answers with actions. I've told this story here, but I think it's my favorite story because it's about a small amount of money, and it's probably one of the first that I publicized in this, about when my daughter was, we were living in the valley and it was a summer, my daughter was in a day camp and she was going to the next day on a trip and it was 10:30 at night and she needed 75 cents for a soda and her poor father said he doesn't have 75 cents. Chinuch was very, very, very difficult in those days. Today too, 75 cents I can always have. Anyway, she said, what should I do? I say, tell him. She sits down with her younger sister. She was about 7, 8 at the time. She's saying, Till. And she asks, she says, "What? I need the money tomorrow morning. I'm leaving the house at 7:30. What? The little kid says, well, maybe someone will think to have to, I don't know what she said. The kid says, she goes, I didn't have the money. She comes back. What happened? Says, a friend of hers who at the Purim carnival, that's 5 months ago, so this is the summer, so that's 5-6 months before, borrowed 75 cents from her. That morning she woke up and she said, I never paid the Kohen girl. They never asked about it, they never talked about it. 75 cents, and she brought it to the day camp. When, if we can show our kids, yes, he answers. He doesn't bother telling you. Promises, I get promises all the time.
What do you tell your kid that when they do that to him and for whatever reason Hashem didn't want it to work out?
What?
You tell your kid to say to him, and for whatever reason Hashem didn't want it to work out the next morning when she needed it. So what do you tell your kid then?
Could I tell you what I tell the people who ask that question?
I'm afraid to hear.
Okay, then let's leave.
No, I know the answer, but...
No, but you don't know what I tell them, though.
No, but for...
I tell them, if you have hesitations about it, then maybe you shouldn't tell them. But if you believe it, then when a shling...
No, but it seems, I'll tell you, it doesn't always happen the way you want it.
It doesn't
right?
always happen.
To call a spade a spade.
Okay, but if...
No, I'm saying, you believe it. You might
have said... I would say like this. Rather than worrying about that now, let's worry about that if it doesn't happen.
No, you have to know how to follow up.
You're not getting my point.
No, I'm getting the point. We have to prepare for the worst. What do you mean? I'm being real.
We're too prepared for the worst that not prepared enough for the best.
But
when
it's serious, what do you tell your kid?
When it happens, call me up immediately and I'll give you an answer.
I'm
just making a point now.
I'm
up at 6 in the morning.
So
but no,
practically speaking.
Yeah. No, okay, but you see, but...
I get the point.
Well, you get the point. Okay, yeah, you get the point. I believe that we have to be very strong in that, because that strength that we have conveys an optimism to them that will tilt the scales that it will more often than not happen.
Granted. But,
that's a big grant. That's a big grant. That's more than a 75 cent grant.
You have to be always prepared, though.
Okay.
You have to prepare for the worst. I'm not on that level yet to assume 100%.
Okay.
The kid
could be. If you won't ruin it, the kid will be. Okay. I'm sorry. Enough. I'm sorry. Okay. So I would say like this. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
That's not I'm going to ruin it.
I apologize. I couldn't resist. I couldn't.
No, I hear what you're saying.
I once had this. See, once in a community out of town. I remember the women were sitting here, the men were sitting here. It was a group of machadchim, and I talked about tefillah and this, and teaching tefillah, and Hashem answered, tell them to be mispal, and the women were like eating it up. And the men started, how could you do that? What if he doesn't answer? What if it doesn't happen? And I got so nice. I said, advice is, you guys don't believe in it. You know, I understand that. You know, that's it. It wasn't too nice. But anyway, I couldn't resist. So my kids are like this. So the truth of the matter is, we do have to understand that Hashem has ultimate knowledge of everything. He never lets a tefillah go unanswered. Sometimes the answer is delayed. Sometimes it's not now. I hate to say the answer is no. I don't agree with the people that say that. The answer could be not now. The answer could be, I have a better etzah. The answer could really be that I want you to go through this difficulty now. And because of the difficulty that you're going through now, I'm going to be able to find an excuse to have rachmonis or a schus or anything to be able to give you what you want, even better and bigger and better at a later time. These things have to be, but my suggestion to you is as follows. I do agree that these things have to be taught. I think they're better taught before the fact, just because of the concern that you have. Because if a kid knows that, yes, it helps. Sometimes it helps directly, and sometimes it helps in a indirect sense, sometimes it helps in the long term, sometimes it's a step in the direction of what you really want, sometimes the thing that you think you want is not what you really want, and Hashem responds to what you think in your heart, what you feel in your life. For example, this simple example for a businessman, the deal should go through tomorrow, it's the biggest deal of my career. Aber, the Rabbeinu Shalom knows that if this deal goes through, you're finished in 6 months. And if this deal doesn't go through, you're going to be all right. So he's really answering in your heart what you want. Tefillah Saveda Shiva Lev. In your heart, you don't want the deal to go through. You want the benefits, the money, the whatever else you're going to gain from the deal. I got a bigger and better gain for you if this deal doesn't go through. But again, I don't talk. I do. You know, it's true. He doesn't speak. And you should know why. There's a very big benefit why he doesn't speak. It's not just agav. It has nothing to do with anything. If we had Nevi'im today, we'd be in big trouble. Because we would act the way we do anyway. Because you see, in the times of the Nevi'im, they also didn't always behave. And with Nevi'im noch, oh, at least we have a good excuse today. We have no neviim, lonu loy, 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 loy. How does it say that? Lo menahel, lo this, lo that. We have no yasme, the yasme, the yasme. Okay, so you know we got a good terrace. You know, so anyway, okay. So anyway, but I just think that's very important that the concept of Hashgacha Pratis, the concept of Hashem's love. I think I do have to run, but I would like to leave you something if you want to take it to read it. It's something that my son wrote about, you know, it's called The Son's Appeal Upon the Loss of His Mother. And he makes a very strong point about our relationship with Hashem. And I think it's something, I don't suggest this format to talk to kids about it, you know, in the term of a parent talking to a kid. Well, if I died, you know, then you would feel this or this. I wouldn't recommend that. You know? But the concept is very important. That sense of opportunity to focus on the relationship with Hashem. And I think that the key point that he makes here is with focus, we can accomplish amazing things in that relationship. Because on a certain sense, we really do have that relationship. We really do. But it's an unfocused relationship. When push comes to shove, I mean, Vahariah, what's the right? There's a tzora, or we're saying tilim, right? There's a this, we go for a brocha. There's a, I'm going to do another mitzvah, I'm going to make a gemach, I'm going to do chesah. We have that hasoga. But it's sort of, it's unfocused. So we live most...
A disconnect. It's a disconnect, yeah.
That's right. In fact, there's a statement we make in davening every day, which we really should be very careful. Ki lishu'oscho kivinu kol hayoim. It doesn't say lishu'oscho kivinu kol yoim. Kol hayoim. That means we are saying, in front of Hashem, that we're awaiting the Yeshua, we're hoping for the Yeshua, and it doesn't necessarily mean the Yeshua for Mashiach, it could mean any Yeshua, you know, kol hayoim. That's what we do all day long. And the truth of the matter is, on a subconscious level it may be true, but we have to bring it forth. Certainly, even if the subconscious level is enough for us, which I question, it's certainly not enough to convey to our children. Our children cannot hear our subconscious talking. Actions are what convey. You know, there's a beautiful poem that we once translated to English. It was written in Hebrew by a professor in the Hebrew University. I don't remember the details, but I remember a person who was not religious, say, and talking about, reflecting about the past, and your Shabbos candles still flicker in my mind's eye, and your Kiddush and your Zmiroi still ring in my ears. And a couple of other things like that, and says, but I stand here confounded, facing the future. What will I pass on to my children? You can't pass on memories. You can't pass on only something that's deeply buried inside. They have to see it. They have to have actions. They have to have, it has to be expressed. So I think that when we start expressing these values and connecting them with Hashgacha Pratis, which is a precursor to having Bitochen, hearing about Bitochen, knowing that there is such a thing, seeing it in sources. Sources, by the way, are very good because once they have a sense of the credibility of a Torah source, then seeing it in the source is like, it's not just on your word, it's just, you know, and exhibiting it in our own lives has a tremendous impact and it can make all the difference. And once they have that bitochen, they have a connection with Hashem, and they have a motivation to want to continue that relationship and continue that emunah. And once a person has it, even if it's shaken by the difficulties of life, the roots are very firm. Without that root of bitochen, I think the emunah is in danger. But when the person has translated that emunah into a bitochen, it's like you've given it roots. You've solidified it with a foundation that can maintain it. Anyway, that's my story.